Donalana Kitchen talks about food. Donalana Kitchen talks recipes. Donalana Kitchen talks about lots of other things on community radio. Welcome to the Donalana Kitchen. I'm Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
Welcome to the Donalana Kitchen, a show where we talk about what's cooking in central Iowa. Today we're going to be talking about leeks and other fall things. Donna will talk about pears, and we'll take some time to consider feeding the world. The World Food Prize and the Occupy the World Food Prize are both happening this week in Des Moines. Today, our special guest is Jean Meek. I met Jean at a farmer's market many, many years ago when I was just first trying to make my living, growing vegetables and selling it to the local market, and she was one of the first people that came up to me and looked at my pile of leeks and said, I know what those are. I know what to do with them. And it gave me heart. I must say, I gave me heart. Thank you, Jean. So welcome to the Donalana Kitchen.
Thank you.
Good. Jean is a longtime Ames resident. She said she's lived in Ames here for 24 years, but she grew up in Britain. She has some things to say about leeks. So, when did you first discover or start eating, or what's
did
your
you
history
grow
with leeks?
With them?
Yeah.
No, I didn't grow up with them. In my house, we didn't eat anything from the onion family because my mother, well, today you would say she was allergic to onions. Then she just said they didn't agree with her. But anyway, so we didn't eat anything like that, and so I didn't know anything about leeks except I'd seen them in the grocery store. And then I went off to college. I went to college as an older student because I worked for several years. So I was 30. And I went up to a university in Scotland, and they eat a lot of leeks in Scotland. And the university I went to didn't have the usual dorm system. They didn't provide meals. But we lived in apartments, and every so many people had a kitchen, so we did our own food. And I got to know this Scottish woman there, and we used to cook together, and she taught me about leeks. And I tried them. I had tried onions myself, you know, away from home earlier on, and found that, in fact, I suffer from my mum's problem, and I couldn't eat onions either. They upset me. But leeks were okay. Leeks are much milder. And so, you know, I've eaten leeks ever since, and I would recommend them to anybody in my boat who finds that they can't eat onions. They make them feel bad, or, you know, they give them stomach problems or whatever.
Good.
Because leeks, I'm getting tongue-tied here, leeks are much milder, and, you know, I can eat those without any bother.
So. Great. The leeks are those things you find in the grocery store or on a farmer's table. They sort of look like a very, very large spring onion.
Yeah,
they don't
overgrown scallion, kind
right,
of.
That's
right.
Exactly right.
They're not the round things. They are in the allium family, which means they're related to onions and garlic, actually.
Yeah.
But they are much milder. They're long and skinny, and they take a long time to grow. And actually, they grow just fine here. They grow also well in the British Isles and in the northern parts of Europe, too,
yeah,
where it's the summers are not quite as hot and long as places that grow these little harder onions. I've had luck in my garden growing both onions and leeks. Leeks, for me, take longer time to grow than onions. I plant them about the same time, and I've been planting them for years as plants, not as seedlings, but, yes, they are seedlings, not as seed. And they take the whole summer to grow. And the more you can mound up or put mulch around, yeah, the leeks, the whiter and longer the stem gets.
That's right.
And usually, leeks last well in the ground, last well into the fall and even into the winter if you mulch them a little bit. This year, I like everything. This year, it's been a little trickier because we had such a moist, moist summer, lots of rain. So I have had trouble keeping my leeks going a long time in the garden because they look like part of them are starting to suffer a little bit from the excess moisture. So I've pulled them up a little earlier than normal, but they're just fine. I've got lots of leeks this year. I have had lots of leeks, but my leek season is coming to the end. I hope other gardens have more leeks going. So, leeks have a connection to the country of Wales. Can you tell me a little bit about that, Jean?
Yes, actually they're connected with several countries in Great Britain, but particularly Wales. And on St. David's Day, the Welsh will wear a leek, or, you know, a little badge.
Literally.
looks like a leek, yes, because it's become the symbol of Wales. I actually have a little story about that. Would you like
please,
me to read
please.
It? It's in one of my recipe books. It says here, the leek is one of the oldest vegetables, but it is not clear why we in Wales should have adopted it as our national emblem. Shakespeare refers in Henry V to the wearing of the leek as an ancient tradition, and his Fluellen claim that it went back to the Battle of Cressy in 1346, when Welsh soldiers gathered leeks to wear as badges to distinguish friend from foe in battle. Another legend associates the leek with St. David. He apparently, during a period of abstinence, lived on nothing but leeks and water. And in memory of him, the Welshman on his day, that sacred herb do wear.
Oh, how nice. So, in Wales, it's the leek. In Scotland, it's the thistle.
That's the thistle, yes.
And in Ireland, it's the shamrock.
Yes.
Yes.
And in England, it's a rose.
And it's, see, there you have it.
I think I'd rather be Welsh. You can eat it.
Yeah. It sounds very utilitarian.
Absolutely. Yeah. Very practical.
Yes.
And there's a reason for eating leeks other than just that they're more mild than onions. They're delicious.
They're sweet.
They're yummy. Tell us, Jean, some of the recipes that you use.
Me personally, or the traditional ones?
Either one.
Oh, well, I tend to use it in just about anything, actually. One of the things I was going to talk about, how you would buy a leek, because I think people here don't really know what to look for in leeks. And I've seen things in the grocery store, which makes me think that includes the people who buy them for the grocery store. To start with, if there are any stalks in the middle where it started to flower, don't touch them. They won't be worth having.
A stalk, as in it's a tough.
Yes.
It's not the soft green silky part that you see usually.
Yeah.
These things do try to put up a flower, and if among the leaves at the top of the leek you see something rather hard coming out, that's the stalk. That's trying to be a flower.
Yeah.
It's a little beyond eating.
Right. Those are old leeks. Don't buy them. They've bolted.
That's right. And then sometimes you see leeks that are really big, you know, like 2 inches in diameter. I wouldn't buy those either.
You want bigger is not better.
No, it isn't. You might get more, but then it'd be tough. You don't want that. And then also, I like to buy leeks that have the green part still on them, because often they trim that off. I guess they think you can eat the leek as a vegetable, just the white part of it, the way you would perhaps an onion. One of the things that we do with it is you cut it up and you braise it. Do we know what braising is here? I think you have
different
terms.
Yes,
right. A little bit of either stock or butter or olive oil, you know.
And you sort of gently fry it. Yes, okay. I wasn't sure if you had a different term.
No.
Yeah. Yes, and you do them in butter, and you also put in a few breadcrumbs and make them crisp in the butter, and then they go over the top of the leeks. And there, if you buy leeks that are perhaps like an inch in diameter, I would cut them in slices before you do that. But if they're thin ones, then you can just chop them in sections, you know, on the length.
So you think no more than an inch in diameter. That's sort of the maximum size.
Oh, that's what I would
nice,
do, yes.
Nice, slender.
Yeah. So you can eat the white part like that, but in Britain, we certainly don't throw the green parts out. They are a bit tougher, but if you're going to cook something that you cook for a long time, you can quite well use them. I put them in stew. In fact, because I can't eat onions, I have over the years sort of sensitized myself to a few bits of onion because my husband loves onion. But quite often instead, I will buy leeks and I cut up all the green parts and sometimes the white and put those in the stew. So you get the sort of oniony flavor without the problems I have with onions. So,
and they're also really good to save for the stock part. If you're making a stock, like a chicken stock where you've eaten all the meat off and you throw the bones in, if you've got leek tops, you can put that in
as well. Well, I've already put the leeks in it, you see. Yes, I mean, I do put them in sometimes when I roast a chicken, too.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so you get the flavor.
Right, so the green part generally takes a longer, more moist cooking that will tenderize it, because the white part is already quite tender.
Yes, that's right. And, of course, you can make soup with them as well.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, the two main traditional dishes in the British Isles are... Well, one of them is cockaliki soup, which you find in Scotland.
Okay, cockaliki is spelled...
C-O-C-K...
Hyphen...
Hyphen A hyphen L-E-E-K-I-E.
That's really cute, isn't it? Cockaliki.
The cock is because you use an old cockerel.
Which is an old chicken.
Yeah.
An old rooster, basically.
A rooster, yes. Yeah, I think that's where the name comes from. The idea of this dish was to use up old chickens that had got too old to be... You know, roast or anything like that, or fried or whatever.
A fine fitting end for an old cockerel. I think that's wonderful.
Yeah. It's for the tough old guys.
They make wonderful soup. That's fine. That's good.
Yeah. And if you're going to make soup, I mean, you can cook it. I mean, the recipe I looked at said from anything up to 6 hours. So, you know, of course, I use a pressure cooker. It's quicker. But, you know, you can... cook. We used to do a lot of things like that. People don't seem to anymore. Old bits of meat that were too tough to do anything else with, you cooked them for ages and ages and made soup with them.
They fall apart.
So you don't waste it.
Crock pots are really good for that also.
Yeah.
Long, slow. Sometimes I plug my crock pot in and just let it cook overnight.
Yes, crock pots would be great for that.
Mm-hmm.
And the taste of leeks with chicken is really good. I find onion and chicken kind of fight with each other. I don't know why. I much prefer the taste of a leek with chicken.
Yes, so, it is a different flavor. Mm-hmm. Similar, but not the same.
Yes. They do nice things for one another. What else would go into a cockaliki soup? Oh, what a nice name, cockaliki.
Mostly the chicken, the old boiling
the old
fowl.
The rooster,
Yes, and the leeks. And you can put rice in it. And most of the recipes I've looked at suggest rice. But I've also had it with potatoes in. And I personally prefer the potatoes. But, you know, it's like any recipe. I mean, is there a recipe for anything? If
right.
It goes back a long way, it's whatever you want to do, really.
Sounds like a good base for anything, and especially with these... Cooler days and cold nights coming on. These warm soups to take a long time sound like a very good idea.
I could think of another dish I developed when my husband was in graduate school and we didn't have very much money. I used to cook a lot of dry beans. I'd make what I called a bean stew, and I always put leeks in that as well for the flavouring. And, you know, it's one of those dishes where you put in whatever vegetables you've got left over, and it's never the same twice running.
Oh, that sounds good.
So anything like that that's going to cook a long time, you can, you know, tenderize the green parts of the leek.
That's good.
And what else is traditional with leeks in the British Isles?
Ah, the other main one is the Welsh leek pie. And I don't have any claim to be Welsh, but my husband's part Welsh. And my parents, when they retired, went to live in Wales, so I learned something about Welsh cooking. And Welsh leek pie, to me, is somewhat similar to a quiche because its base is eggs and usually not milk but cream. And our cream tends to be somewhat heartier than the cream you get here.
Thicker.
And so it's not exactly a diet food. But
and does it have a pastry crust under it? Like
now, that varies. You can do it as a quiche where you do a bottom crust and then put the leeks and the eggs and stuff inside the crust and cook it that way. We would call that a flan. Mm-hmm. But it's sort of like a quiche. But you can do it with a pastry lid on top. And I have seen recipes where you put all the leeks and the eggs and stuff in a dish and then put pastry on top of that, you know, no bottom crust.
Oh, so it's either the top or the bottom.
Uh-huh. Or both.
Both, woo!
You can, again, you know.
That's gilding the lily, isn't it?
I think this is the problem. If you know, a recipe's been around for centuries, as some of these have, there is no sort of one pattern to it. You know, it's however people have developed it, probably in different places,
And how would you make your pie crust? With butter?
Yes, I have to plead guilty to that one. I always use butter because I like the flavor better.
Oh, me too. We've talked about pie crust alternatives.
Well, we're researching an informal survey of pie crust.
This is the pie crust survey. And how do you – so you make yours with straight butter?
Generally, yes. Uh-huh. Sometimes I might add a little of, you know, something else to it. But usually I make it with straight butter, yes. And I tend to mix the flours, too. I use partly whole wheat flour and partly white.
Mm-hmm.
When I first came to live here, I tried making a... Oh, I had a disastrous occasion. My husband invited a friend over to dinner, and he said, make a steak and kidney pie, something very English.
Yes, yes.
And I couldn't make the pie dough, and then I found out the flour was different here from what I was used to, and it didn't stick together, so I had a real disaster. And I found when I tried to make whole wheat pastry, the same kind of thing happened, so I cut it, you know, with white flour as well, and that works okay.
That's good. You brought some cookbooks
with you. Yes, I did. One is called Celtic Cookery by a Welsh woman named Iris Price Jones, a very Welsh name. And it was out of that I read you the story about the Welsh symbol, the leek. And there are recipes for Welsh leek pie in here. And hers is actually, she says you can make a pastry lid to put on top or not, however you choose. So
pastry lid, I like that.
Well, you know, top crust.
Right.
Yeah. But it does have a bottom crust. And she has another recipe called Nest of Leeks, which is more like, I was saying, how you put the same kind of stuff, eggs and leeks and things, in a dish and then put a pastry crust over the top of it. Actually, no, this one's different. I'm confused. This is one where you cook the leeks and you mix them up with mashed potato.
Oh.
And you make a sort of crust with the mashed potato and then put, let's see, I think this has eggs in it. Yes, hard-boiled eggs.
Oh, hard. So sautéed leeks, hard-boiled eggs, and mashed potatoes?
Yes.
Well, that sounds like fun, actually.
And then you make a cheese sauce that you pour over it all. So I haven't tried this one. I'll have to try this.
And that's the Nest of Leeks?
Nest of Leeks, yes.
Okay. So it sounds yummy.
Are the hard-boiled eggs, like, in the nest?
Yes. You make the nest with the mashed potatoes and the leeks, which you've mixed together. Uh-huh. In fact, he talks about beating it up until it's green.
Oh.
Yeah, because the leeks, obviously she's used the green part of the leeks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then you arrange that around the edge of a fireproof dish and keep hot. And then you make the sauce, put the boiled eggs in, and then pour the sauce over it.
What a nice thing
to do. That sounds like something children would even eat.
Well,
perhaps. No, I don't know. Anyway.
Nest
of Leeks. Okay.
Yeah, the other book I have is Scottish Cookery. And this has cockaleeky soup. I also found recipe, I think that was in the Welsh one, for something called licky pie, not leek. It's a different spelling, but that's, again, it's like Welsh leek pie, just a variation. Actually, I think that was the one that came from Cornwall. There are some recipes from Cornwall. That's the western county, right down the southwest of England, for anybody who doesn't know where it is. And there are Celtic people there. They were originally Celts, and they are connected with the Bretons in the north of France.
Oh, okay.
And they have some leek recipes, which to me look like variations on both Welsh leek pie and cockaleeky soup. They're the same idea.
Well, yeah, they do eat a lot of leeks in France as well. That's kind of the...
Yes.
About as far south as the leek goes in Europe.
Leeks will grow, yes, yeah.
We should talk about cleaning leeks.
Yes.
That is the main trick with leeks, and probably we all have different techniques, but the sand will tend to get down into the folds of the leeks, almost down to the white part. Do you have any good tricks for cleaning them?
No. I mean, I cut all the green parts off so they get washed individually.
Mm-hmm.
But the white part, I think you've just got to use your eyes. And if you see black in there, obviously there's something in it. You know, you have to...
The white part is usually pretty pretty solid.
Yes, it is.
When as the leek starts to separate, as the leaves start to bend away from the center of it, that's where dirt can get down in. And because the leek spends a long time sitting in the garden, things will blow in there. And my good trick for cleaning leeks is, I use the green parts too, but I peel off the outside and chop the leek just beyond where the white part ends.
Yeah, that's what I do.
And then if you lay the leek horizontally on your cutting board, cut the long ways of the leeks about 4 or 5 inches down once, turn it again and 4 or 5 inches down again and cut that. You slice the top and turn it and slice the top again. And then you run that end under cold water. You've got your hand around the white stalk part, and the top is kind of fanned out. It kind of turned into a little brush.
Yes.
And you can really squish that around
yes,
in the water.
Would be good, eh?
Squish it around, and that gets the grainy bits out. And then you can go and follow your recipe anyway. Oh, and do cut off the
roots at the bottom.
Yeah. The roots, yes.
And I was sort of trained to cut them right where the green and the white intercept and actually just quarter that white part only down a couple of inches. So it also becomes kind of loose and you fan them out and then you do the same thing. You kind of really, really rinse in there. But it's that separating the very top parts of the white down as far as you can see any little bits and you just rinse it out. And that's really the main thing you have to know about leeks that's not really doesn't really apply to any other vegetables.
Yeah. Right. So be sure to clean your leeks. You will be glad you did.
Yes, otherwise you'll be crunchy.
Yeah, it's like cleaning lettuce. You really have to do it.
Yes.
I tend to slice mine because if I'm going to put them in a stew, it doesn't matter what they look like.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
And then just, you know, carefully watch that there aren't any bits of grit in mm-hmm. each slice. But, mm-hmm. yes, all the things you've suggested.
Yeah, because if you're not cutting them all,
if you want the length of it.
Yeah, if you have the length of it and you've cut the root off and you've fanned the top out, you can just oil them up a bit in salt and pepper and roast them, and they're very, very lovely like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then they look really pretty on the plate if you're doing like a cut of meat or something. There's so many things you can do with leeks. They're just, this time of year, they're very precious.
A fine thing to do. So we must thank all the people that have come up with these great, great leek recipes. One thing I've always enjoyed about whales that I've always been intrigued with. For one thing, I have a Welsh Corgi. I don't know if that's a connection. And a good dog, a good place. Also, the Welsh flag has a dragon on it. I mean, how many places have dragons on their flag? You said the Welsh flag has a dragon on it.
Yes.
Oh, lovely.
Mm. They used to. I always thought this was interesting. In very old maps of the world, probably the European world, where they hadn't really charted it.
Oh, they put dragons on.
Yes, and they'll say in this region dragons be there.
Yes.
But maybe they're just in Wales all the time. So there we go. That's wonderful.
Well, I've never seen one.
Oh, no. Oh, good. Good. Jean, you also say you like music, and you spend your time. She not only cooks leeks, she does music for the OSHA Lifelong Learning Institute. How long have you been doing that? And tell us a little bit about you and your music.
Oh, dear. I've been doing it almost since it started. We had the 20th anniversary last year, and I was one of the few people who went back all that time. I started teaching the second year, so I've been doing
singing. Is it singing or?
No, this is music appreciation, basically, history, that kind of thing,
mm-hmm.
you know, classical music.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So this is the lifelong, it used to be called College for Seniors,
yeah. Yes.
Yes,
yes. Yeah.
And where does this happen?
Well, it now happens over in the Alumni Centre. It used to be in Sheeman. But, you know, we moved over there when they built it.
Mm-hmm. Good. We'll take a little
music
break here. A little bit of music. Let's listen to some classical bluegrass symphony here. We're back. This is KHOI Radio 89.1. Ames, Story City, and all of the fine towns in central Iowa. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. We're talking about food and farming and other things like we usually do. Listen to this radio station. Support this radio station. This is a community radio station. We're all volunteers. We need your support. We need your ears. We need your money. There's going to be a KHOI fundraiser happening in November, second week in November. So look for that. Look for that. Support your radio station. We appreciate that you're out there listening. You can listen to the Donna Lana Kitchen Tuesday at noon. It's repeated at 7 p.m. in the evening on Tuesday. And then you can go to the archives, KHOI website, khoifm.org. Shows are archived. Go to the Donna Lana Kitchen page. There are recipes there. There are past shows there. There's a great picture of Donna and I.
Well, I don't know how great it is,
well,
but
yeah, it's good enough.
It's a picture, okay.
Let's talk about pears, Donna.
Well, I've been musing lately that pears are becoming rather underappreciated in our contemporary culinary world. Everybody's always on about apples, And maybe it's because pears are a little, they're just a little more difficult to grow and transport. I mean, you know, you can go in the grocery store and maybe you'll say 3 or 4 varieties of apples, which is really not very much. But actually, this time of year, you can maybe see 7 or 8 varieties. And pears, we've got the Bosque pear, which is kind of more firm, and it's perfect for cooking. But then there are also other lovely, the d'Anjou, the Comice, which you hardly ever see anymore because when it is soft, it's like ice cream. It's just delicious. But that moment of softness is very hard to predict.
I've never heard of a Comice.
Comice, they're kind of bulbous, they're green, and then they just get really soft. Oh. The other pear that has a fleeting moment is a Seckel pear, which is a smaller pear. And they're also, I mean, the saying is a pear is good, perfectly ripe for about 10 minutes. But, boy, during that 10 minutes, it's sublime. So I would encourage you all to be sure to, this time of year, at least have a pear or two and kind of put it on your kitchen counter. And at that moment when it feels just right, slightly soft but not too mushy, just gobble it up, except for the Bosque pears. They will sit a bit longer. Also, we have pear cider as well as apple cider is available this time of year. And as one thing I am seeing more of is as we're getting more and more alcoholic ciders, hard ciders, available in bottles in all of the grocery stores, there also are a few pear ciders alcoholic, which are delicious. And I would encourage tasting of those. The other thing that pears are really good for is poaching. There are two kind of classic dishes made with Bosque pears. And one is if you poach them in port. So you can do it two ways. If you want it to be really...
Explain what a poaching is.
Poaching is when you pour, in this case, the port into the pan, like a saucepan, and you... peel the pear on the outside. You can do it either by slicing the pear in half and taking the seeds out and the stem bits all the way through and then peeling the outside. And then you lay them in the poaching liquid, which is usually, I would put in the port, maybe a dash of pepper, black pepper, a pinch of salt. There are other herbs, and you might put a bit of cinnamon, but you don't want to put too much because the pear is of itself very subtly flavored. So as you poach them in port wine, that is, they turn this beautiful color of red. And then you can just spoon them onto a plate, and they make a lovely dessert. Or you can leave the pear whole, and you kind of core out of the bottom and you leave the stem and then it will, and you have to peel it. And then it will sit up on the plate and you pour the sauce over it. Another really favorite thing of, well, people do put pears in apples or apples in green salads with like pecans or walnuts and just slice that in. Or an old favorite of mine is to take, there's two ways. You could either do a poached pear, like for a dessert, so it's sweetened. You could poach it in even a white wine with a little bit of sugar, or even no wine at all, and a little, and when you're poaching, you put the lid on. So it's poaching an egg.
So you can poach it in water and sugar?
You could.
Yeah?
Yeah.
And when you poach something, you have to cover the pear? Or just kind of, is it kind of
no,
like
you don't have
around
to cover the pear. But it should be maybe half the height of the pear.
Okay.
Not if the pear is standing up. That's too. But maybe like an inch of poaching liquid in the bottom. But you cover the pot that it's in because it's cooking in the steam that's coming off of the liquid. And then you just lift the poached pear out with a slotted spoon or something, put a little of the poaching liquid over it, and then... Nice things, pears go really well with blue cheeses or Roquefort or something like that. So a kind of fancy way would be to mix some Roquefort or blue cheeses very well into either a cream cheese or even a whipped cream and put it in a piping bag and squiggle it onto the pear in the little hole. That's sort of a kind of simple but elaborate, you know, it's a nice presentation. Or you could just pop it on with a teaspoon, too.
That sounds pretty good, Jean. We ought to try that.
It is.
Actually, I'm familiar with this recipe.
Right.
I
these are just
it came
standards.
From my part, the
oh,
world
I
originally.
Think it did. I think it did.
I don't know if this is right, but I thought that when you cut it in half, you put it with sort of face down in the liquid.
Yes, you can.
Yeah.
You can.
Yeah.
Well, that probably keeps it prettier.
It would probably stabilize it so it doesn't bounce around quite as much in the pan.
Yeah.
Or and if you're sitting them up and if you've got the whole pear, but you can slice as you're coring it up from the bottom very delicately, but leaving a bit of stem in the upper thinner areas. You can make sure the bottom is
make it flat.
It stands up in the pan and doesn't bounce around and get all bruised and funny shaped.
A tricky little fruit, but it sounds like it's well worth the trouble.
Yes. Yeah. So now I was thinking, oh, pear sorbet or things that, you know, I'm going to go to bat for the pear a little bit in this next few weeks.
I have a question. I seem to remember somewhere in the recesses of my memory about some dish that you could make with pears, but you used a pear that was hard.
That's the Basque pear.
Yeah.
The Basque pears don't ever get soft, like a Comis or an Anjou.
Or Bartlett.
Bartlett's
kind of the go-to pear.
Yes, that's true. And those pears, you always went soft. But the reason you cook the cooked pears are usually the Basque pear, which is harder.
Pear. That's kind I wondered of a, if that was
yeah,
the
it's
case.
Kind of a goldeny brown, as opposed to the other pears, which are often green, though not always. Seckles are usually a little bit brown as well. Yes, Basque pears are for cooking, and they do have a longer shelf life.
There's also pears I see in the grocery store, the produce section, that don't have a pointy end. They're round. They're called, I don't know, Oriental or Japanese?
Asian pears.
Asian
pears. They're not really a true pear.
I don't think.
Well, they're not, in my book, a true pear. And you can eat them more. They're often, you can get them all year round because they're obviously imported from somewhere. We used to have them in California. I eat them more like apples, really. You know, you just peel them and
They seem, in my experience, they seem a bit firmer, too.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so those could be a poaching or a cooking.
Yeah, I think you probably could cook those. Now, there is one, pear butter is another thing I've made one year, but I'll tell you about the disaster. One year somebody brought me some local pear tree. Oh, here's all these free pears. They're really wonderful. And there were a lot of them. So I thought, pear butter. And I cooked them down, and there are certain varieties of pears that are very kind of crystally, you know, they have this little crunch bit. They don't make good apple butter.
I wouldn't think so.
No, because by the time you've cooked, the flavor is good, but they still have this gritty texture to them. So I was very disappointed, and I just couldn't think of anything to do with them because it was just not pleasant eating.
What a shame.
Yeah, so I think those kinds of pears, if they're really crunchy when you eat them, they're probably best eaten raw rather than cooked down and concentrated. So that's my pear disaster. I haven't repeated that one. I only did that one year.
Pear. Well, thinking about food from across the pond, I want to mention Ames British Foods and the Mucky Duck here in town. Just as a interesting place to go. I do like their food out there. Go out there for fish and chips every now and then. And Scotch eggs. I have discovered Scotch eggs.
Tell us what they are.
I never had one. You tell me what a Scotch egg is.
Well, basically, it's a hard-boiled egg coated in sausage meat and then fried, except I think you're supposed to deep fry it. My husband likes to make them. He's not British, but he's learned some of these things and he likes to do them. And we do it just in a frying pan. You have to keep turning it over, but I suspect if you did it in a deep fryer, that would be better. But
so they have them at the Mucky Duck?
I didn't know he was doing them now.
They do. I have to go and try one.
Me too.
Because I think it's a wonderful thing to have with a pint. He has really good beers out there.
Yes.
And the Scotch eggs are very good. And he serves them, or we can ask for, a really nice tangy mustard goes very well with that.
Yeah. Coleman's mustard.
Oh, yes. All right. Here we go. Coleman's mustard. Right. Yes. Yeah. Well, another little shout-out for the Mucky Duck is that I really like the fish and chips and currently on his menu, you can get gluten-free batter on your chips if you ask for it.
On your fish.
On your fish. On your fish.
And did he start putting batter on
the chips? But on the batter on the fish. And I appreciate that a whole lot, and it's very good. So, thank you, Marcus.
He does
thank
a great job out there.
Thank you, Marcus.
Yeah, I could tell you something about the Scotch eggs. I never knew how to make them because in Britain you can buy them ready-made in shops.
And the trick with these Scotch eggs, how do you get that meat kind of wrapped around a slippery flour? Flour. Okay, all right.
Oh, you roll the egg in flour and then put the meat around it?
Yeah.
And how thick is the sausage around the egg?
A bit.
Like a quarter inch, half? Oh, an inch.
No. Yeah. I mean, that's not the traditional way. About a quarter of an inch,
I would really say thin.
Yeah.
And that's pork sausage then, obviously.
Yes, generally.
Mm. Oh, goody. Well, I am going to have
some. Do ask for a scotch egg and a pint of, I believe it's called speckled hen.
Oh, you're not.
Speckled hen.
Yeah. I think that's a really good combination.
It sounds great.
There's more stuff out there, too. So
yes.
That's look for the Mucky Duck. That's southeast of town.
Speaking of local restaurants, I have to throw in a bit here that I went to the new, Bar La Tosca last night, and I had the Bar La Tosca is, where is it? It used to be
the old Lucalan.
It's on Main Street.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and I had his gnocchi. And I consider gnocchi is a very basic food, but it's not easy to make well. And it's kind of like a test of the chef, basically. Mm-hmm. And his were very light and fluffy and very potato-y, delicious. I highly recommend them. He served them in a corn broth, which was quite good. But the gnocchi themselves were very fine.
Right on. Good job.
We get an A+ there, Brett.
Good.
The chef.
Good job. Yes, that's Bar La Tosca, and for many, many years ahead, I'm sure it'll be known as the old Lucalans, but the new name is Bar La Tosca.
Yeah, well, we were making a joke that it's now called the restaurant of Sue DeBleek's brother.
That's it. He's the chef. So there's
Brad DeBleek is the chef.
Oh, I thought of opera when you said La Tosca.
Yeah, I did too. All right. There's a Ted Kooser event coming up.
Yes, Ted Kooser is going to be at the Octagon Arts Center. I think it's this Sunday, at 2 p.m. Now, he is we'll call him a regional Midwestern writer.
He grew up in Ames.
Yes, and we're very lucky to be able to hear him do a live reading, and Lana's going to read one of his poems right now.
Just a little taste of what you can see this weekend. This is a little short poem by Ted Kooser called A Place in Kansas. Somewhere in Kansas, a friend found an empty stone house alone in a wheat field. Over the door was incised the ship's anchor. There was no one to ask what that anchor was doing in Kansas. No water for miles. Not a single white sail of a meaning broke the horizon, though he stood there for hours. It's like that in Kansas. Forever. It was a poem by Ted Kooser.
I like that.
You're listening to KHOI Community Radio.
Thank you.
We're back. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen on KHOI Community Radio. We're talking with Jean Meek about food from the British Isles, Wales, all over. And you have something to say about leeks.
Yes, it was just one postscript, you might say. My husband said I had to say this. And by the way, he is not from the British Isles. He's American. And he said that he grew up eating beef liver and onions, and he hated it. It was like leather with onions, you know. And I make lamb's liver, which is what I was used to eating in Britain, with leeks, and he loves that. So give leeks
Bravo.
A try.
Bravo.
A victory, a victory. There's some things coming up this week. In Des Moines, the World Food Prize is being held all week. And also, Occupy the World Food Prize is going on.
I'm going to say the World Food Prize comes from the work of Norman Borlaug, who was the sort of father of the Green Revolution, which increased food production worldwide significantly and was a marvelous thing. But the food prize today has its detractors, and I think rightfully so. And the discussion of the alternative World Food Prize does bring a fuller picture of food production.
Right. There's
globally.
There's an organization called Occupy the World Food Prize. You can look up the World Food Prize. You can Google that, or you can Google Occupy the World Food Prize. There are two different looks at food production.
And the future of food production.
And the future of food production. The Alternatives People's Food Prize is a perfect antidote to the Corporate Ag World Food Prize.
Which is the Norman Borlaug group.
Yeah, right. This year, the winners are given a prize called the Food Sovereignty Prize. We're talking about sustainability and access to food for by people of all over. This year's winners of the Food Sovereignty Prize are the Community to Community Development Organization, who work with U.S. farm workers in Washington State, and also another recipient is the Union of Agricultural Work Committees of Palestine, based in Gaza and the West Bank. Both honorees represent communities that defend human rights to food in the face of policies of land and water grabbing.
So what's the event tonight?
The event tonight...
In Des Moines.
Dennis and Elizabeth Kucinich are speaking this evening at the First Unitarian Church, 1800 Bell Avenue in Des Moines, 7 o'clock on Tuesday, October 14th. That's today. The World Occupy the World Food Prize Food Sovereignty Prize Award Ceremony will happen tomorrow, Wednesday. And on Thursday, there is an Occupy the World Food Prize Rally and Direct Action at the Capitol, I believe. Yes.
And I have to say, on our program next week, that's next Tuesday, we're going to discuss some of these issues in depth with Neil Flora, who is a rural sociologist who lives here in Ames. And she's going to come and talk. We're all going to kind of talk about what happened during this event that's going on for the next few days and the implications of it and really what it means, the two kinds of World Food Prizes and the whole shebang there.
It's always good to question authority. And when someone says, we are feeding the world, well, are we feeding somebody's pocketbook instead? Always good to ask questions and find out what's going on.
Yeah, so you're going to get an earful of this next week.
I will have to listen.
Oh, please do.
Very good. There's other food things going on. There's a movie coming up.
Oh, right. The GPSA Graduate Program of Sustainable Agriculture is having on October 24th, which is actually Food Day, and I'm not sure who designated that. They're showing a movie called Growing Cities, which is about urban agriculture. It's apparently quite a good film, but that's at 7 p.m. in Carver 0001, which I think is the kind of theater there. So that's October 24th, 7 p.m., Growing Cities, a film that's open to the public.
Ah, very good. Also, I mentioned before, coming up is going to be the fundraiser for KHOI Radio. That'll be in early November. And keep us in mind as we're moving into the holiday season.
I believe we're going to auction off a carrot cake.
Oh, yes. Things are on the show. Yeah, on the show. So tune in. That show will be October 11th. We'll have big goings on
right,
then.
That's a carrot cake made by the cafe.
Yes, who makes pretty dandy carrot cake, as I understand. Mm-hmm. So dig down into your pocketbook and think not only of your tummy, but the future of the radio station.
Your community radio station. And yes. Our pleasure.
Our pleasure, yes. Also, if you have things you'd like to discuss or ideas for the show, do you have things to talk about? What's
food
on your
things?
Plate? What's on your plate? Contact us. KHOIRadio@gmail.com. Send us an email. We'd appreciate that. And write Donna Lana Kitchen or DLK in the subject line so the email doesn't get lost in the great web of this radio station. It'll find its way to us eventually. We always like to hear from you. Thanks for your input. Another thing coming up this weekend, Ames Main Street Farmers Market Chili Cook-Off, October 18th. That's during the market in the morning. It should be a beautiful weekend. It should be a beautiful weekend. I hope all of you who are planning on cooking chili will bring lots, because I intend to sample a lot of chili.
Now, we're getting near the end of the Main Street Farmers Market, aren't we? Two more times?
Yes, I believe the famous Main Street Farmers Market goes through October 25th. So
get on down there. They have lots and lots of good food vendors in addition to the probably Lana's Leeks will be there. Are you still selling leeks,
no,
Lana?
No, I'm sorry.
Leeks are gone. She still has onions and garlic, I know.
Matter of fact, I'm done. So you missed me.
Oh,
you
dear.
Missed me. That's how it goes with a small farm. Things just get sold out. Sorry about that, folks.
There will be other farmers
There's lots of other farmers there. It'll be very fun.
So there's probably still squash. There's probably still onions.
Pumpkins. All kinds of, yes, lots of good squash, a lot of good winter things. And root vegetables, yes.
Yes.
Good. Also coming up this weekend on the Saturday, October 18th, is the 4th Annual Wild Rose English Country Dance Ball. For more information, contact 515-292-8590. That's Linda Lieberman. And that's going to be held in the Methodist Annex, 130 South Sheldon Ames Avenue, Saturday night, beginning at 7:30. And guess what?
Didn't you say live music, right?
Live music by Cecil's Harp. Comes to hear some real good golden oldies and have some fun dancing to this sort of stuff. It's really fun. Dress is casual or semi-formal. It's kind of nice to dress up.
Right. It's a ball. It's their annual ball.
Think of Jane Austen as you do this. And there will be a catered buffet by Ames British Foods.
Oh.
So heaven knows what goes on there. There's always little interesting meat pie sort of thing.
Oh, yes.
Sort of thing.
Meat pie is a whole subject.
Oh, that's a whole subject, too. So great, great. You've been listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen with Lana Noctical.
And Donna Priskintas.
With excellent engineering by Rick Morrison. And we have a special guest, Jean Meek. Thank you for coming today, Jean.
Thank you for having me.
You've been listening to music by Grammony. We'll go out with a tune called Seventh Heaven. Eat good food and enjoy
and
life.
Leeks.
And leeks. Eat good food, leeks. Enjoy life.
Yum.